Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, poet and art critic Gil McElroy. Each week, we visit with a local author or some other person involved in writing, performing, or sometimes the visual arts. We try to get an introduction to their work and a glimpse into their lives, and perhaps find out what prompts them to create and give them an opportunity to read from their work. Welcome, Gil.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Gil McElroy is a poet, visual artist, curator, and visual arts critic. He's published 4 books of poetry with Talon Books, a collection of arts writing with Gaspereau Press, and a memoir about his father and what it was like growing up a military brat during the height of the Cold War that was also published by Talon Books. He's also published numerous chapbooks, and in 2013 was the co-winner of the B.P. Nicol Chapbook Award for the Merton Lake Propers, published by Baseline Press in London, Ontario. His critical writing on art has been published in magazines in Canada, the U.S., and Australia. A collection of his essays and articles entitled Gravity and Grace, Selected Writing on Contemporary Canadian Art, was published in 2001. He's worked as an independent curator since the 1980s, organizing exhibitions for galleries in Ontario and the Maritimes. He currently lives in Colborne and works for Canada Post, delivering mail on rural routes. So, Gil, you've been writing poetry for a long time. How did you get started? Was it something you've always done?
No, that's not something I've always done. Making art is something I've always done from the time I was just a little child. I mean, I didn't call it, nobody called it art, but I drew and painted and made things, so just constantly. So that's my origin in terms of my involvement with art. I didn't get really interested in poetry until towards the end of high school, when I discovered 20th century American poetry. Actually, that was the introduction. And that turned my whole world upside down. And I began to investigate it in a more serious way and devote myself towards trying to contribute towards it in some small way. Although I never did give up making art, and I still exhibit art and still make art. But the poetry, the interest in, and dedication to poetry dates back to my late teens.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about your writing. What is your poetry about, if you have to sum it up?
Yeah, there's a tough question. Yes. I have no idea what my poetry is about. I rarely write poems that are about something, although I do occasionally do it. Most of the time what I've discovered is if I try to write a poem about something, it turns out to be a piece of absolute rubbish, because I'm trying to be in control, and the poem doesn't always want me to be in control. The poem wants to say what it wants to say, and it becomes this fight, and I'm trying to exert my will over where the poem should be going, and the poem maybe doesn't want to go that way.
Where does it come from?
It comes from my notebooks. I like things that I mishear in conversations or on television or whatever. Yeah. I like that. And I like things that I misread. I like mistakes. And I collect those. And I make them up, too. I also, you could call it a free association or surrealist writing, whatever. I sit and I'll make up lines just off the top of my head and write them down in my notebook. And a lot of them are just garbage. But some of them are pretty good. And the things that I miss here are usually the best things, and I'll savor those. And if I sit down to write something, what I'll generally have in mind is a line, a first line, say, perhaps something that I've misheard. And then I'll build on that from my journal contributions, what I've kept in my notebooks. Uh-huh. I'll look for a line that maybe somehow works with that first line, and or contradicts it, or does something really interesting with it, and I'll build a poem up that way. And that way, I'm not in control, really. The poem is deciding it wants to go a certain way. And at the end, it's usually, oh, well, isn't that interesting? And I rarely understand what the poem is about, but it's something new. The first, I suppose, mentor I had was an American poet named Ezra Pound, who was a horrible human being, but an amazing writer.
Yes.
And one of his dictums was, make it new. Make it new. And I've never let go of that. And so I always try to make it new, make something new, make a poem that's never been made before, put those words in an order that have never been put before, something new, alive. Uh-huh. And it lives now.
Yes. So tell us some more about your interest in cosmology and explain how time figures in your work.
Oh, very big questions. My parents encouraged my nosiness as a child. I had a microscope and a telescope growing up. They weren't the best quality things, but I was able to do interesting things with them. Mm. Look at things through the microscope and draw them, and look at things through my telescope and go, holy cow. So I've been interested in astronomy since I was a child, making a pinhole on a piece of cardboard so I could watch a partial solar eclipse. I did that kind of stuff as a kid. I was a real nerd. And I loved that stuff. And in the 1980s, I got more seriously involved in it using real, much better quality telescopes. And I became interested in the study of cosmology, the origins and evolution of the universe, at a whole other level because of that. Those are the ultimate questions. Where do we come from? Why is there something, and why is it not all nothing? Why is there something? Why does the universe exist? And I'm fascinated by those questions and the people who ask those questions, and they frame a lot of what I write about, sometimes very indirectly, very oblique, and sometimes very, very directly, actually. I've written poem sequence about meteor showers, which I find fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I've written a poem, a visual poem about double stars in rotation about one another.
Mm. You've also written a memoir.
Yes, I have, yeah.
Cold Comfort, Growing Up Cold War. Can you tell us a little bit about that and why it was important to record this experience? Because it's very different from your way of writing poetry.
Yes.
I mean, it's completely opposite in a way, isn't it?
It was something I never expected I would actually do. My father died in 1998, and after he died, I was given a cardboard box full of photographs, which I didn't look at much at the time. I sort of put them aside, and then I got kind of curious and started poking around in them. And my dad had been I knew this about my father. He'd been a talented amateur photographer, and he had used a camera from the time he was a teenager, and he took some pretty damn good pictures, and some of which I'd had framed and kept on the walls of my house. But I discovered other things, that he had documented and recorded his life in the military. He had served in the RCAF, the Royal Canadian Air Force, through World War II, got out for a few years after, and then rejoined in the late 1940s and made it a career up until his retirement. And he documented the places he'd been. He was a man I barely knew. He left when I was 11. But even before that, he'd been away a lot on postings, and he never talked about what he did. And I started looking at these pictures and wondering, where the hell is this? And one of them, it was of a seaplane that had been tied up, and there were some guys loading things out of it. It was a World War II vintage seaplane. And on the back of the picture, it said, Kitegazuit, How I Got Here. What the hell is Kitegazuit? So I applied for his military record, which I got, and began doing research and discovering where my father had been. And he'd led a kind of really interesting life. He'd been in really interesting places and done really interesting things. Mm-hmm. I started writing down what I remembered of him just for me, making notes in my notebook, just short little anecdotes of things I remembered about him, because I figured, one of these days, that memory is just going to slip below the surface. I'm never going to recall it again. It's gone forever. So I thought I'd write them down. And I wasn't thinking of a book. I was just thinking about remembering my dad. Mm. And I started collecting them, and then I sat down and wrote one of them, and I realized there's something here. I can do something with this. And it became what turned out to be the very first chapter of the book. And I got three chapters written, and they're all based around my father's photographs. And I sent them to my publisher, Talon Books, Carl Siegler, and I said, does this interest you at all? And he said, yes, it does interest me. So I kept at it and finished the book and collected the photographs that I wanted to appear in the book to publish it. And it was my way of finding out who this man had been. I have a lot of respect now for him that I didn't have as an angry adolescent.
Well, how about reading us some of your poems?
Okay. maybe start with something perhaps a little more accessible. I did a poem sequence called Meteor Showers, a descriptive catalog, which is actually the title of another book about meteor showers. And there are meteor showers that occur throughout the year, and I picked one for each month. So the sequence is 12 poems in length. The poems are each in two parts. So there's a poem, and then there's a kind of commentary on the poem at the bottom. And this is a technique I do a lot. Lyrids, April 16th to April 25th. No instruments, these eyes of mine. They are, indeed, 19th century facts at very best, and the starry dimness of a familiar one, or the brilliance of the strange, is all become but an airy disk of sighs. The detection of sources and the scintillation, all this business of air, we must visit over it. From the small window on the stairs quite near the top, I could see eastward, between houses and the rising stars. One night I set the tiny, precise machine of a borrowed telescope inside the window casing, and for hours watched Jupiter rise beyond the close and cluttered horizon, watched it scintillate in the rising heat of nearby rooftops, and prayed the neighbors wouldn't see the obvious glint of a lens aimed more or less straight into their bathroom window. I have a long, ongoing poem sequence called The Julian Days, and The Julian Days is based upon a scientific way of calculating the date. There's no months, years, and all that. It's just days. Mm-hmm. And it starts, I think it's 4004 BC. They just picked a date, whoever devised this. Started in 4004 BC and started accumulating days that have passed since then. And it's used by astronomers to calculate astronomical events. And I did a reading at York University a number of years ago. And I had a geologist come up to me afterwards who'd been at the reading who was just thrilled because someone knew what the Julian Day system was because apparently they use it as well.
Right. In some of the poems, maybe the one you're going to read, there's a big number
at the bottom.
And
that's the date.
Of the Julian calendar.
Right, that's the date, okay. And it's abstracted, so you can't. You know, I could say May 13th, 1995, and you think, sure. Oh, yeah, May, so he was probably blah, 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 blah. You associate too many things with that, and I wanted to strip away the association. You can plug the number, the Julian Day number, into a calculator online. You can find out the day, but you got to do a little bit of work. Mm. So the day, the number for each of the poems is sometimes it's the day I wrote the poem, because they're occasional poems. I wrote them very quickly. Sometimes it's the day the event happened. Sometimes it's the day I revised the poem, or just a number I picked out of thin air. So it covers all sorts of things. There's no theme that runs through it other than it's an accumulation of poems. This one's actually a love poem. Julian Day 2450782. Yes, a love poem. Here is the doorstep, extreme in the importance of my claim. Here is my body, sleep vacated, bound therefore unto earth. I am in the sway of the observable. I have this small point of volume and nothing more. There was a wind in her arms, and the mere fact of my body astonished and speaking with a perfect abandon so that I could breathe again. I was a stagehand, or a roadie, as many people like to call it, for a number of years. There's a few poems that cover that period. Julian Day 2450075. Late or very early, show down, trucks packed, discover I'm unable to see faces, a bolt of frozen black lightning bisecting my eye. In the arena's bowels, the usual microwave maze of my sight distends and bloats. Jagged white teeth on the cold walk to the car, strobing red and white on the drive home, finally defeated by all the illumination. It's about a migraine, a poem about a migraine.
Thank you, Gil. Now we'll take a short break.